Welcome to Destiny. Now here's your host, Cliff Dunning.
One of the reasons I launched Destiny was the ability to talk about levels of consciousness. And over the years, I've studied in-depthly the Maya. And as a young person, when I was introduced to a Mayan shaman who would later become a mentor, his name was Humbats Men, I discovered that the native cultures had really in-depth understandings of levels of consciousness, different realities, and experienced them, not with drugs, with special meditative practices. And I was amazed at this, and it's also, luckily, when I was younger, I started meditating. I learned at the time, when I was 18, a technique called transcendental meditation. We don't leave the body consciously. Sometimes when you're meditating, you will slip a little bit, not necessarily leave your body, but you will be aware of just your surroundings on a very acute level. And when I say acute, you can hear and you can perceive very deeply, very deeply. And today we're going to hear about a technique of time shifting where you actually leave the body and enter a dimension that's either in the past or it's in the future, or it's dimensional travel and you're doing some shifting. Now, I don't get into that when I meditate. My meditation is what I use for, or I should say, my meditation is a form of rebooting the brain. So when I meditate, and everybody changes the way everybody meditates a little differently, but transcendental meditation was brought out by the Maharishi Mahesh Yogi as a way to settle the mind of the Western culture. I mean, meditation is thousands and thousands and thousands of years old. And one of the things I've always thought is it was designed to synchronize the body, mind, and connect with the spirit. And I believe that's the basis for most meditations. But the Maharishi, when he came out and started teaching the techniques of meditation, he distilled probably hundreds of years of training, or even longer, thousands of years, into a simple 20-minute meditative process that you do once in the morning and once in the evening. And I have used it for years to reboot my brain in the afternoon, like say just before dinner or just after dinner, and do a 20-minute meditation and actually prepare for another phase of my conscious awakening or wakefulness. And I've benefited from meditation on so many different levels, and I really recommend, if you can, to check out meditation. Now, transcendental meditation used to be a few $100. Now I think it's $1,200 for the 2-week program. And you don't go every day. You go, you learn about it, you understand how it works on the brain and how it is it's healing and so forth and so on. But there's other techniques of meditation. You know, go reach out and do a search in your area for a meditative technique appeals to you. I suggest transcendental meditation because it's very old. And like I said, it's been distilled down to a simplified 20-minute meditation. Now, there's some meditations that go for an hour. There's some Zen meditations where you sit in a posture and, you know, you stare at the wall or something like that. I can't do that. I tried that when I was younger, and I can't do it. 20 minutes times two a day is perfect for me. And I think the reason that the Maharishi Mahesh Yogi created this, it was because he understood that the Western culture can't sit still. We can't sit still for more than a few minutes. We can't, an hour sitting still is not only disruptive, I mean, some people don't have time to sit for an hour. So anyhow, check out a meditative technique that you find is beneficial. See what happens. And I can tell you this, they've already shown that meditative processes are beneficial for healing. They're beneficial for reducing stress. And believe me, and this is documented, stress is the precursor to disease. If you're under stress every single day, it's going to lead to a breakdown of your immune system, which opens up the door for colds, flus, and then the worse comes around, you're starting to have digestive problems, which leads to ulcers, which leads to lower intestinal problems, which leads to constipation, which leads to going to your doctor and getting a medication. And then if that doesn't work, they open you up surgically. I mean, it just gets uglier and uglier. And this is what is fueling the allopathic medical model, is that people don't have time to look at their bodies, their minds, and they use drugs as a Band-Aid. I don't feel well. Well, let's give you some drugs. Let's give you some medication to mask this, and it'll go away on its own. That works on some cases, but if you keep using drugs to mask your problems, it can push a disease process in, and it comes roaring back later. And this is the beginning of a degenerative process, which can lead to cancer. And cancer is a screaming message from your body and your brain going, dude, or whatever, you know, settle down, look at your life. What is happening here? And you got to redirect your program. So meditation is a great way to relieve stress. And that is a big, big plus for me. And if you're an active person, meditation goes a long way to benefit you. So, hey, if it's $1,200 for TM, Transcendental Meditation, that's an investment on your health. It's an investment on your body, mind, and spirit wellness. And the more in touch you are with your body and your processes, the better you're going to be, the better you're going to feel. And God, nobody wants to be ill. Nobody wants to have cancer. Nobody wants to have rheumatoid arthritis or one of these degenerative types of slow, destructive processes that your body has been screaming for you to pay attention to. And so, you know, and this is the big lesson I learned with my mentor, is that you just got to, you know, shift away from the screaming craziness of work life, of family, and whatever else. You have to take care of yourself. And so that's really the benefit of meditation. So today we're going to learn about a process of shifting, time shifting with our author today. And he does talk a little bit about the process, but you can't really take that information and go very far with it. You got to go and get the book. And the book is available on Amazon. And we'll talk more about that later. So today it's all about shifting into different dimensions, different realities, or what they call bilocating. You're sitting somewhere and then a part of you is transcending into the past, the future, or he even talks about black holes, so that's kind of strange. So here's today's program. Conversations on Cannabis with Dr. Pepper Hernandez. This is all about cannabis. And this week we are going to have Dr. Pepper kind of decode some of these questions that have been coming in and answer these questions on cannabis from listeners. So, hey, Pepper, how are you? How you doing?
Hi, Cliff. I'm doing very well. Thank you.
Cool. All right. Hey, this is interesting to answer some questions, but this is important because we kind of get to the pulse of our listenership. And the first question comes from David. And by the way, if you send in questions, send them to Cliff for now, cliff@earthancients.com. We're going to have a Destiny email in the next couple of weeks, but our parent company, our parent podcast, Earth Ancients, is the way to get it. cliff@earthancients.com. Send me questions and we'll have Dr. Pepper answer them. Our first question comes from David. He says, I would be very interested to hear your cannabis expert talk about blends of cannabis that allow you to enjoy without some of the associated paranoia you can get if you suffer from anxiety. So what do you have to say about that?
Well, first off, I think this question and answer thing is really brilliant. And I look forward to answering some for the general population. I think it's very smart. As far as David, was it David?
David, yeah.
David, as far as David's question, I'm going to have to go into two parts with this. First off, let's understand why people are experiencing anxiety, fear, tension, the paranoia, right? These things that control the paranoia. It is THC-rich cannabis. When we oversaturate our brains with cannabinoids, especially THC, it can possibly cause those stimulants. So the first thing is we want to microdose. We want to go very small, very low and slow. We want to choose particular cultivars with terpenes and cannabinoids that really don't send you off into that paranoia, anxiety, tension space, especially if you already are susceptible to having anxiety. Now, of course, there are, and this is all educational purposes only, there are supplements, there are foods, things that can help you with anxiety. So you want to get that under control first or speak to a cannabis therapy consultant to help you with the exact terpene profile for you. But in general, terpenes, if you look for linalool, that is the terpene that can be found in cannabis that will help relax you. So it's kind of like an anti-anxiety terpene, if you will. So that would be my suggestion. And then also finding cannabinoids that are more high in CBD, CBG, CBN, the low THC that will give you mind altering, but it won't make you feel so incredibly out of control or high, which again, microdosing is the answer for that. So there are a couple strains that I'd probably, or cultivars that I'd probably suggest that I've used myself because I also have a tendency towards anxiety. Harlequin, love Harlequin. I love an AC/DC. That's a really great strain for me. I also like Northern Lights. That really works for me as well. So I hope that answers your question, David.
Yeah, that's a great suggestion. I'm glad that you gave us some cultivars. Okay, so the next question comes from Nancy, and she asks, please ask Dr. Hernandez what to use for women's periods, cramping, bloating, and fatigue. And she says, I hear CBD is helpful.
Great. That is a great question, Nancy. And I do get plenty of questions for women's unique needs through hormonal shifts and changes. And there are so many wonderful products out there. I'm not going to name any companies per se. However, I will give you suggestions of what would be best for certain situations. There is a topical salve, and you can find your favorite out there. Make sure it's full spectrum. It has the whole plant. It's not an isolate. It's not just a CBD isolate. It's full spectrum. And you can get the CBD version if you choose. And you can get also a high THC version. But that topical is going to be great on the belly for any kind of inflammation or pain relief or cramping, irritability. Also on the back to help with sleep. So those kind of things are definitely something I would shift to, at least look into. Your question specifically was on CBD. And I just think that you know, there's so much more than an isolate CBD. So when you are choosing something, make sure it's full spectrum or at least broad spectrum in the state if you're legal and you have THC availability. There are also tinctures that can help, you know, those tinctures that are in combination with MCT oil or coconut oil. Those are great to take under the tongue, hold under the tongue, let it get into your bloodstream. That can help with any kind of anxiety or stress that come from that time frame. There's just different things. There's also like one thing that I use on a pretty regular basis is a magnesium salt bath where they have infused THC and CBD within the salt. And that's wonderful for relaxation purposes. And then we can go even further out to suppositories, vaginal suppositories, where you can get something that contains a full spectrum or broad spectrum THC to CBD range. So there's quite a bit out there in the female discomfort realm right now. And so just look out there, look for the best product. Again, look for organic, find out the farms, you know, farm to table kind of issues. Make sure that you're looking for full spectrum or broad spectrum, not just one particular isolate, because cannabis is all encompassing the endocannabinoid system. It has the cannabinoids and the terpenes, and they're all very important.
They're going to have to go to a dispensary for the stuff that you're talking about, right? Because you can't go, I mean, you can go to your pharmacy and get the really low grade CBD oil or whatever, but you don't want to touch that. The organic products you're talking about are available at where other than dispensaries?
They could be online, or if you have a co-op and you have a family farm near you, you can check into that. If you're in a legal state where they're growing for medicinal and recreational purposes, you can go to a farmer's market. They have cannabis farmers markets in some states now. Just you have to connect with your farmers and you'll be able to find other avenues to purchase. If all you have is dispensaries, choose the best dispensary. They'll be able to give you education and knowledge. If you can only have CBD, there are some states that only allow CBD, which, you know, is dwindling. That number is dwindling every single day. But if you're one of those states that only has CBD, choose the best, highest quality CBD by asking the company if they use isolate or if they use full spectrum.
Mm-hmm. And real quickly, if someone lives in an illegal state, they can't import it because the company can't send it to them. So what is their solution? Is just to do the best they can. Of course, CBD, does that cross over into the illegal states? Sure, right? So they can look it up.
Yes, there are certain CBD companies that are full spectrum. There is a few out of Northern California, and you can purchase them online. They're full spectrum, which means they have under 0.03% THC. They're the cultivars that we have discussed before. I can give you a list of them again if you'd like. But those, they can go into any state because CBD is legal. My main point is CBD needs to be full spectrum, not isolate. And there are a lot of cultivars out there that have lower THC quality that's actually considered hemp. And those products are good. But you need to do your research and you need to contact dispensaries if you're lucky, farmers if you're lucky, or someone who's educated in your community who can guide you.
Yeah, I think the key term that you use, Dr. Hernandez, is full spectrum. Full spectrum. That means that they have to use the whole plant. So that's really critical. All right, these questions are excellent. Keep them coming if you want to know more about using cannabis. And this is really what I designed the show for. So I'm really happy that we can do this. So fantastic. For more information, go to drpepperhernandez.com. And there are tons of videos, tons of downloads and information. And also on YouTube, she has videos available. And if you want to connect with Dr. Pepper directly, Dr. Pepper Hernandez, you can go there and register for an appointment. So she'd be happy to see you. All right. Pepper, great speaking with you, and we'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, Cliff. We'll talk soon.
We talk about states of consciousness a great deal on Destiny, and we know that the ancient mystics, the Hindu, and a lot of older cultures worked with levels of consciousness through meditation, through various physical practices. You can call it Tai Chi or yoga. And the Hindu Rig Vedas describe these levels of consciousness. Some are lucid states, some appear to be out of body. We're just now in the West becoming to understand the levels that these ancient texts talk about. A few years ago, they actually analyzed the state of mind a person goes into when they're meditating and discovered that they have benefits. Meditation has benefits. But today, we're talking about a whole different level of consciousness. Person in the past, not anyone, but a person studying these techniques who had used them for a period of time, could shift their awareness, could shift their in some cases, their entire body into other realities, into other dimensions. And my guest today has written a book called Time Shifts, Experiences of Slipping into the Past and Future. And it's amazing. I haven't heard of this before. I vaguely, as a meditator, have thought about it, but I hadn't heard of anything like this before. And my guest today is Von Broschler, and he is an award-winning journalist, a former faculty member at the prestigious Omega Institute, and he is the author of 12 books, including 7 Secrets of Time Travel. And we're going to learn today just what he's talking about when he says time shifts. Von, welcome to Destiny. How are you?
Fine. Thank you, Cliff. Good to be with you.
All right. This is a fascinating book on many, many levels. You yourself have experienced these time shifts. And I want to talk about, before we get into your personal experience, what you discovered are some of the links to the Eastern philosophy or the Eastern practice of consciously shifting not only your awareness, but the actual physical presence into other dimensions. What do we know from the past?
Well, I lean heavily on reading toward the back of the book called Yoga Sutras of Patanjali. And it's an ancient book. It outlines yoga. It outlines meditation. But moreover, it is a book of Raja Yoga or Wisdom Yoga, which is really a study of consciousness and consciousness development. So being a theosophist, I'm naturally drawn toward Raja Yoga. I'm naturally drawn toward consciousness. A student of Madame Blavatsky, who said, everything is consciousness. We've all descended from consciousness above. It's light, and it propels and sustains all of life. And I know that consciousness dwells in all living creatures, in all living things, and it certainly dwells in us. So it's awakening the consciousness within us. And as we often say, heightened consciousness or higher consciousness, it is awakening the inner self, the true self, as they would say in Eastern tradition. And it is awakening the spirit within. And it is my contention that this is a way to actually leave the body into a great discovery outside what we call normal time and space.
Fascinating. Now, in studying the sutras, the Vedics, yeah. Some of these passages, ancient Hindus, do they have a name for what you describe as time shift? Is there a terminology within the yogic tradition, or is it just something that a initiative would use to get into this state?
Well, my deepest interest in Hindu tradition and meditation through yoga is studying Samadhi mysticism. In the Samadhis, they will begin with treating their young chelas or initiates into controlled dreaming. And so one of the techniques I have in my book here, Time Shifts, is learning to control a lucid dream and program a lucid dream. And this is what they do in Samadhi mysticism. Samadhi mysticism then is, once again, like Raja Yoga, the study of consciousness. And in learning to control their dreams, these young initiates would go far outside their physical body in an altered state of consciousness outside the body, and they would explore other times and other places. This is something that, you know, it's been tracked a long time. You'll remember a few years back, not too many years back, there was a huge tsunami that hit Indonesia and southern India.
Yeah.
And it was interesting because the Samadhis worried about their young initiates that had gone into the Samadhi state. And in the Samadhi state, they would be gone for, not just a few minutes, but they would be literally out of, you know, outside their body in the state of lucid dreaming for maybe days. So they wondered what to do, because, you know, normally when someone is meditating in a deep meditation, you protect them, you put them in a secret place. You don't touch them, remove them. They worried about their safety. So they finally decided that they would very carefully pick them up and move them. Now, here's the funny thing, Cliff. Some of these people woke up 3 days later in an altered, a different location. And I suppose on some body awareness level, they knew they'd been moved. But you know, they were that deep. Deep into their meditation, you see. Now, they were exploring alternate time and space. Mm-hmm. And this is an initial state for the Samadhi mystics to actually then go into their great voyages of discovery, where they go into a meditation. Let's say, I think in the West, we'd call it like a shamanic trance. So they go into a deep, deep, deep meditation, and they leave, consciously leave, you know. So in my book, I try to talk about people who accidentally slip out of time. And then I try to talk about people who consciously do time shifts. It's very interesting how some people have been able to master this, and yet most people have never heard of it.
Yeah, I find it fascinating, and as a an advocate for Eastern philosophy incorporated into a Western lifestyle, which is what we in the United States are dealing with, it's important to look at this as a form of therapy. And that's one of the questions that I want to start with you is, what are the benefits of this time shift, would you say? Outside of general meditation has a lot of healing benefits, but
yes,
with this within the meditative process, because you have to go into an altered state to get here, to get to this. Yeah. I mean, we'll talk a little bit later about some case studies of people who slipped into this shift, but what would you say are a benefit of time shifting?
Well, you know, actually, you can use it therapeutically. And I'm a big believer in that, getting outside your body to heal your body. But other than that, I think that it's a journey of discovery. It's a journey of insight. And I would compare it to what in the West we call the tradition of the arc of the hero's journey. You know, was Odysseus really looking for Ithaca? Or was he looking for something beyond Ithaca? It was almost anticlimactic when he managed to get his boat back home to his island. You see, and when we go into outside the body, we are on a journey of discovery. And it's a journey of self-discovery. In that sense, it's like the hero's journey. So what I like to tell people is we're all on a journey of self-discovery. We're all in the arc of a hero's journey. Some of us are just standing at the entryway, the gateway, waiting and hearing the call, but never advancing. Well, you have to accept the call to go on the arc of the hero's journey. Mm-hmm. You have to get past the gatekeeper. You have to confront challenges, obstacles, supernatural forces, go to the great abyss, go through transformation, and eventually return a changed, transformed person. You know, in a sense, you die and you are born again as a new person. So, I mean, if you want to be reborn, this is the way to do it, right? Mm-hmm. So you go through this transformation process of self-discovery. So I think that when you go backward or forward in time, and what I advocate is a programming so that you actually will know where you're going and reliably program where you're going to go and what you're going to see and what you need to know, then you can begin to orient yourself on this journey of spiritual growth. You can determine where you've been, where you're going, and make some sense of this life mission or purpose we have in living. Why did you come into this existence? You know, I think there's a spirit within all of us, the inner self, the true self, who really knows where you've been and where you're going and why you're here. But we don't have this sense of harmony so that the body can communicate with the spirit. This is what yoga can teach us. It can teach us in the initial stage of hatha yoga. It can teach us how to establish a sense of inner unity or peace or tranquility. It can establish a harmony so that when you do want to go outside your body, people say, well, how can I go? I mean, you know, there's a lot of resistance to it. The resistance to it is the body's self-mechanism to control your destiny. It all it sees and all it knows is, you know, what it can touch, smell, and hear, and feel. And our eyes aren't that good. Our ears aren't that good. But still, we have this pocket calculator inside our head called the analytical mind. And the analytical mind says, I'm in control here. Nobody leaves. I'm in control here. So you have to establish a sense of inner harmony to ever embark on a journey of discovery, to ever go into a time shift.
Mm-hmm. From a Western medical point of view, especially psychiatric, a lot of this would sound almost like someone's having a mental breakdown or mm-hmm. is delusional. How do you tell the difference?
Well, this is interesting. You bring it up this way, because a lot of people will have an accidental time slip. That is to say, they hadn't expected it or programmed it. It just happened.
Yeah.
And often they'll say they were delusional. This could not have happened. It was purely imaginary. It didn't happen. They were daydreaming. It was a vision. Medical science, psychology, really is reluctant to see anything beyond the material. That is to say, your brain. You can dissect your brain and figure out what part of the brain controls what function. Basically, what the brain does is it controls your anatomical reactions to things. It keeps you breathing. Thank goodness when you go into meditation, it continues breathing. It continues to pump blood. All of this very, very, very good. So then we have this situation where people are actually going outside of the body. And when they try to report what they've seen, in the case of like even lucid dreaming or time shifts, or let's say an out-of-body experience within a near-death experience, then there's just no way medically to deal with this, because there's no way you can materially measure your consciousness. Mm-hmm. There's no way you can measure the inner self, the true self. There's no way you can measure your creative visualization. It's just a concept, you know. And we assume that it's a construct that's been created by the analytical mind, but it's so far beyond that.
Hmm. That's fascinating. I wanted you to talk about a case study that you present in the book. The gentleman's name is Jack Wayne Kennedy, who was diving at Rock Lake, Wisconsin. And that's an interesting place for many of our listeners, because it's the site of underwater, they're called rock teepees, but they're megalithic structures underwater.
Yeah.
And they present a great deal of interest to archaeologists, but also people who want to know the history of an area. And we've talked about it in the past, because they've did some radar underwater scanning and found just some significantly sized megaliths there. So talk a little bit about Jack's experience and what he uncovered by when he came up. He heard some very unusual sounds. Talk a little bit about it, would you please?
Yeah. Well, the story I tell was actually an interview I did with the author of the Rock Lake book, Frank Joseph. And Frank Joseph, he had heard many stories and read that 8 years before, Native Americans had constructed, or they knew about, these what he called pyramids at the bottom of the lake. So he wanted to get in scuba gear and go look at it. Now, this is a lake between Milwaukee and Madison. So he goes with two colleagues who run the boat while Frank's in his scuba gear. And when he is submerged, he somehow establishes some distance between him and the boat, because it's very murky. And when he comes to the surface, he realizes the boat is quite a ways away. But he listens and he hears chanting, what sounds like possibly Native American chanting, but it was like chanting or singing in the distance. And as he focused his attention on it, it seemed to get louder. And then when he got closer to the boat, he asked his friends in the boat if they had heard the singing, which to him was very distinct. And he said, "No, I heard nothing at all." And they thought he was kind of daffy, you know, like, you know, he'd been underwater too long. So later on that night, though, he met with some people on the island. Oh, I should say that he was able to find nobody nearby there who could have been making the sound. And it sounded like many, many people. But later on at a gathering, the other side of the island, he met with a man who had the same experience. They alone heard the song, the chanting, no one else, you see. Mm-hmm. So this is very often what happens, is you'll shift in time. And everyone around you, I mean, you're the only one, you know. Yeah. And very often when you shift in time, where you go to the time and place you go, they will not seem to see you.
Is that what they call bilocating, where you're physically one place and then a part of your consciousness, or sometimes even what looks like you as a person, but maybe in a different dimension, like a ghost, is captured in another time frame?
Yes, that's it.
Okay. Do you feel like this is something that we had in an earlier period in our life? We talk a lot about pre-Diluvian people, a civilization that was more in touch with their mind, body, and spirit, and these practices were presented as a form of education.
Yes.
Do you believe that at all?
I do. I do, in fact. I think that we've lost a lot. I think we've lost an awful lot from earlier civilizations. And I don't know how this happened or why this happened, whether, you know, after the flood, we suddenly lost all this knowledge. After the fire at Alexandria, if we lost all this, if we went through the burning times and we lost everything in the Middle Ages, mm-hmm. It seems that we no longer are in harmony or in connection with what we might call spirit anymore. You know, I mean, you can see this most particularly in our abandonment of nature. You know, nature is just something that you pave over. Mm-hmm. You know, there's just no sense of harmony. And it's like, I think people have a very odd idea what spirit is. It's really not just singing a song or something. It's spirit is much bigger than that.
It seems like we hear about time shifts from the native perspective because their oral traditions have been handed down for thousands and thousands of years.
Yeah.
And I work closely with Mayan elders, and they don't use the term time shift, but they do talk about bilocating and moving into different dimensions. But this is something that is now relegated to the shaman of a tribe or a medicine man, whereas prior to that,
yeah,
it was probably part of an institution of education or learning.
Exactly. And I try to talk about the shamanic tradition. And it is truly global, but I mean, we're more familiar with Native American spirituality, where there would be one person who would be the shaman of the tribe. And I think, accurate to our description here, this person goes into a trance, and they would not call it meditation. They would call it like dream walker or spirit walker, and or maybe skinwalker. And they would go into this. They would seemingly transcend what we call ordinary time and space. They would go somewhere, and what would they do? They would go into the past to meet with the ancestors, to listen. To listen, not to interact, but to listen. They would go into the future to see what the future holds for their people. You know, this is a great service, but you're right. It isn't just the shaman of the tribe. You know, the vision quest would be something that everybody at a certain age would be expected to do, to find out who you are.
Yeah. You speak of Carlos Castaneda and Don Juan, who is his teacher, and it seems, and I read all of his books years ago, fascinating books.
Yeah.
But it seems like he had to go on vision quests to access these time shifts.
Yeah.
And today, people are going on ayahuasca trips and things like that. Do you think that that's the shortcut? Is that a good solution to do a time shift using drugs?
No. The short answer is no. I mean, because you may actually slip into another consciousness with drugs, but at the same time, you're going to be somewhat disoriented. You see, and you can't make a lot of sense of it. So I think what people need to think about when they go into a deep, active meditation like this and leave the body and transcend time and space is that you need, as part of your consciousness, your energy body, you need your acute sense of awareness. And the last thing you need are drugs, you know.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Timothy Leary, but it's not the way to go.
Well, it's a quick shift, you know. I mean, LSD, you don't get a choice. You're flying whether you like it or not.
That's true. But you know, back to Castaneda, and I think his books are very valuable.
Yeah.
And one thing that comes through loud and clear in his books is the term stopping the world. You know, what, my friends, does he mean by stopping the world? He means completely, completely divorcing yourself from one foot in this world and one foot in another. You have to totally commit to this. If you're actually going to transcend time and space, if you're going to go into a consciousness body and actually do this vision questing or voyage of discovery, whatever you want to call it, you have to be totally, totally dedicated to it. You know, which means you're no longer going to be smelling the roses. You're no longer going to go, you're going to be seeing with new eyes and hearing with new ears, as often said in the Christian Bible. See with new ears, see with new eyes, hear with new ears is a common phrase. And this is exactly what you do. I mean, you are going to have a keener sense of perceptive awareness than you ever have in this world. But to do that, you have to go into a very deep meditation. You have to totally put the body to sleep. You have to totally tune out the mind or let it go to a rest posture. And when you can do that, then you can leave. But you have to actually have a focused intent to leave. And you have to have harmonic agreement within the totality of your being that you can leave, and a sense that you'll be safe when you do this. And you have to have a clear plan, an agenda of where you're going to go and what you're going to see. So, I mean, I try again and again with little exercises to get people to creatively visualize where they're going to go and what they're going to see, you know, because you can actually set this up. And one thing we often make the mistake of doing in deep active meditation is not totally tuning out the analytical mind. If you're processing words or sounds or thoughts, you haven't really tuned out the mind, and you're never going to have the conscious mind spring forward because it's going to be blocked. Our analytical mind is, in a sense, the gatekeeper to the soul. It protects you and keeps you inside, but it doesn't let you out. So, I mean, I try very hard to show people how to visualize where they want to go and what they want to see, not just think about it. You know, a lot of what we've inherited from the East is rather been poorly translated Sanskrit.
Right.
And it's sad, you know, like when they say in you'll see this in classical yoga instruction books, concentrate, and cross that word out, focused intent, creatively visualize, not concentrate. Concentration is what you do with your analytical mind. If you're concentrating, you're not really meditating. You're having a quiet time. Yeah. A lot of people will have a meditation where they just have a quiet time. It's kind of like in school when you put your head down at the desk and be quiet.
Now, does the body naturally want to fall into these states? Is it something that in your practice, have you discovered that this is an ability that everybody has, and it's within our makeup? It's just that we haven't used it in thousands of years.
Yes, it's totally in our makeup. The inner you, the true self, the spirit or consciousness that dwells within you, it fully knows who it is. And it longs to get out, and it longs to learn and grow and discover why it's here and get on with your life. But, you know, we suppress it. You know, once again, it's the gatekeeper mentality. So in yoga, they often say, the mind is the creator of illusion. Yeah. And then we must slay the mind. And I say to you, you know, once again, bad translation from Sanskrit words, you don't slay the mind. You reach an inner harmony of the totality of your being, and you allow the consciousness within you to emerge as you put the analytical mind to rest.
Yeah. Talk about your experience as a young child. And you slipped into an altered state of time. You bring it up in the very beginning of the book. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
I think for a long time, I thought I was a lost soul because I kept having these experiences and you don't talk about them if you want to avoid, you know, therapy. You know, nobody wants to hear your story. But the first one I can remember was I was like 11 or 12. And I went berry picking and I thought, well, I never take the school bus to school. You know, I walk to school and I thought, I want to get on the school bus. And there it is parked in our neighborhood. But the school bus is an old school bus that's been converted to berry picker bus. And it would pick up people to go pick berries out in the 20 miles away. And so a bunch of us said, well, I understand that they have lots of berries and they let you eat them and they let you go swimming in the river. And that part appealed to me. So I got on the berry bus and I just ate my fill of berries and I went swimming every day until they honked the horn. We'd ride home on the bus. But one day I got very sick and I was at the river and I'm just thinking like, oh my gosh. And they said, well, you ate too many berries. You got sick. I said, no, this is very different. Sometimes you just know, and there's that inner spirit in you that knows you're very, very sick. Mm-hmm. And that's when spirit intercedes and takes control. Like when you're in an accident and you're able to lift the car or something like this, or see around corners. Well, that's what happened. So I decided I was going to go home because they wouldn't take me home. Yeah, I had to wait for the bus. I tried to get someone to take me home. So I see that every day we drive across a railroad track to get to the berry field. So I go to that railroad track and I tell my friends, I'm going to walk on this track and it's going to take me to my house. They said, no, it won't work. And I said, sure. I said, because the railroad track goes right in front of my house. And no, I don't know if this is the right road track. I don't know. I mean, it's like I'm a stupid kid. But I feel like I know where I'm going. And, yeah. And I would suggest to you that at those moments, your inner spirit knows where to take you. So I start to walk. And as I round the corner and I can no longer see my friends urging me to come back, I take one step down the track and then I take another step. Boom, I'm in front of my house instantly. Instantly in front of my house, go inside, flop on my mother's bed. She comes in and said, what's wrong? I said, I'm really sick. I need a doctor. Well, it turned out that I got to the hospital just after my appendix had burst.
Wow.
Which is a dangerous situation. So we finally got my doctor who was trying to finish up the back nine before the patient dies. You know, it's like, well, you know, golf score is important. But anyway, I didn't tell anybody about this. You know, it just seemed too crazy, you know, and no one seemed to want the backstory. It's just that I got home, I got to the hospital, and that was all good, right? So, I mean, I would talk to my friends about how I left the berry field and how I got there, and they would say, well, angels carried you. That was the best answer I had for many years. But Cliff, I don't remember any angels. I remember taking two steps and being home. Now, a year after this happened, I look out and I am forced to admit the railroad tracks do not run past my front door. Never have, never will. Not even near there.
Wow.
So a couple of years later, we moved north of town. And at that home, the railroad tracks did pass in front of the driveway to our house. That was my first experience, and I've had others, and every time it's like I guess it gets a little easier, because when you return, you have the assurance that you've been there before, and you're not crazy. But very few of us will ever talk about these things.
Would you say that in the obviously thinking about it, since you know that you were an 11-year-old kid, did you bend time somehow, and you were able to go from the Lake and Barry area to your home in a couple of steps? Is that what you feel happened?
What I think happened. Now that's really a story of time travel, because I actually moved in time and space, and I never returned. Those are kind of rare, actually. You know, usually you're in a consciousness body, you're in an etheric body, an astral body. And no one sees you. No one interacts with you. You're like a fly on the wall watching things with new eyes, new ears. But in that case, I don't think I bent time. I think that time is like a conveyor belt that loops back on itself. And I think there's only one timeline. And I will go back to what Professor Einstein said, as I understand it, about time, that where we are, the immediate presence that we are focused on, is our sense of now. It's where light strikes us. It's where our eyes are focused. It is where our intent is focused. So all we see is the ground in front of us in what we call the here and now. So, but the conveyor belt, it goes on endlessly and eventually comes back, loops. There's only one conveyor belt. The point is, where do you want to step on the conveyor belt? Where do you want to focus your intent on the conveyor belt? Most of us focus our eyes on the ground in front of us in the present moment. We call that the here and now. So I think if you can like visualize another time, another place, there's no reason why you can't go there. In a consciousness body.
Yeah, we'll get into some of the techniques that you recommend in your book, but you have a chapter called Misconceptions of Time. Yeah. Have we confused our understanding of time? Have we, in our Western ways, looking at our wristwatches, looking at our wall clocks, looking at where we're going and the time it takes to get there and come back, are we kind of out of touch with the sink of our reality, because we have to look at this artificial focused time?
Exactly. I mean, time is really, even I think scientists today would all agree that time is solar time. It is when light strikes you that defines now, you know. So what we have this sense that we can control time with clocks and watches and everything. And this is only a convenient measure, because time is like endless. It's endless. It isn't just now. This is just where we're focused is right now. So we have a lot of misconception about time. There's all the time in the world to do whatever you want to do, if you know how to get there.
Yeah, that's a really loaded answer, though. I mean, there's lots of time left, you know. I mean, because we're all looking at from the day we live as a child until a point where we're consciously aware of our existence. And I think a lot of times, and this can you can be in an advanced age and you're not aware of your existence. You're not, you know, you're just living according to whatever pattern, you know, the way your parents brought you up, how you were educated.
Well, we think of our time, our shelf life, if you will, as when the body decays and dies. And there's more than that. And we know, I mean, Dr. Raymond Moody started studying near-death experiences, and he ended up believing fully in reincarnation. You know, we picked the Dalai Lama 14 times in a row by interviewing little children that remember living before as the Dalai Lama. You know, so you know, life, you know, time goes on and on and on and on and on, and it never ends. It never ends. But we think we're like, in a sense, in our bodies, we're like hermit crabs. You know, you outlive your shell and you move on to another shell. Well, the hermit crab doesn't look back at the shell and say, I'm dead. It just moves on to another shell. And so that's the way it is with us. We look at this mortal coil of ours, our physical body, and we say, when our time is up, we'll die, you know? And it's just simply because the heart gives out. Well, you know, it's like the motor in your car gives out. You know, it's like, this is a very material, short-sighted understanding of how things go. Life is endless. Look at nature. It never ends.
Mm-hmm. Talk a little bit about energy vortexes, the astral plane, and the so-called black holes. Do we affect those when we shift time?
So I think you've hit on something here, Cliff. You know, in my study of people and interviews of people that claim that they've gone through a time slip or a time shift, in all cases, they seem to go through a consciousness shift, you know, accidentally or intentionally. And then there also is, in many cases, a shift in the power around them, the energy grid, you know, the energetic, the what do you call it, electromagnetic field around them. So like classic case would be like the Bermuda Triangle, you know, where there's like a distortion in the electromagnetic energy field. So we say like there's a portal, or there's an energy vortex, or there's a power spot, or there's a meridian, or a plate shift. Anything that'll change the electromagnetic energy of an area makes it conducive to time slips.
Wow. Give us an example of somebody who shifted their awareness and went to an advanced period of time, like in the future.
Oh, well, I guess I've done that, you know, and it's like, I've done it a couple times, and it's like, it's a little bit startling to see what lies ahead. But I would mention that this is not as rare as people might think. You know, there is the case of prophetic dreams. Many people have prophetic dreams, and I would suggest that they've gone forward in time to witness something.
Okay. But talk about, I mean, when you went forward, did you see really advanced technology, or was it more just in the presence of an environment that was noticeably advanced from what we're dealing with today?
What I witnessed on two occasions was Earth transformation, where the Earth was, well, it was raining crystals, is what it was raining, and the Earth was moving, and I've been in an earthquake and it felt like that, where the Earth was not stable, it was going through transition. But, you know, once again, that's not the end. That's just a transition. Change is inevitable. It's just moving with the change. So, yeah, I think that it is good to go forward to see what lies ahead. Mm-hmm. It is informative to know what our future holds on a personal level and for all of us. It alerts you as to what you need to prepare for and what you need to be ready for. It's telling what's around the corner, you know, as you round the bend at a high speed. It is useful on a very personal level.
Fascinating. I'd like you to give us an example of the technique that you teach to help people time shift and whatever other benefits are associated with the level of consciousness that you help people get into.
I would encourage people, if they really want to get into a deep out-of-body meditation, to transcend time and space, to recline on their backs, arms and legs outstretched, often called in yoga the dead man pose. Although you can sit into a stiff chair as long as your feet are firmly planted. The point is you put your body to sleep. You consciously do this. You focus your consciousness to your feet, your legs, your arms, your torso, all the way to the top of your head. Put it all to sleep. Just give it the order. Get heavy, get dense, become numb, go to sleep, go to sleep. Finally, you do this with your mind, your analytical mind. And you say, you know, I'm not going to hear anything. I'm not going to see anything. I'm not going to think anything. You tune it all out. There can be no thoughts going through your head, no sounds going through your head. And then you focus on seeing a clear blank slate inside your head. And then with your mind's eye, you begin to draw a picture. You paint a picture of where you want to go, what you want to see. You know, it can be a time, it can be a place, it could be a situation that you want to visit. It can be characters, it could be you in the past. It could be a moment in history you want to witness. It could be your relatives, you want to see what they were like as children. And then you tuck that into the back of your consciousness, and then you prepare yourself to leave. You reach a final accord, reach a state of harmony where the analytical mind will, as gatekeeper, permit you to pass. You convince it that it's going to be safe. That's very important. That you're going to be secure, that it will be restful and enjoy it. And then you're going to allow your consciousness to come forward. At that point, you bring forward what you've visualized, and you bring this clear blank slate back in front of you, and it becomes a perfect map to take you there. So I say, create a map. Create a map of where you want to go and what you want to see. And you draw it like a picture. I think this technique works very well. I've tried it with many groups. Mm-hmm. It seems to work. But you have to stop thinking. If you're trying to think your way there, you're never going to get there.
So you're asking students to relax as best they can, I guess, kind of clear the brain, but also have that intention to shift to...
the consciousness shift, yeah.
Yeah, that's fascinating.
So it's stopping the world. So I've had people say, well, you know, My meditation teacher tells me that, you know, it's okay if I'm a little bit conscious of you here in the room with me, and a little bit conscious of where I am in the room, and as long as I'm kind of submerged, you know. I say completely unplug yourself, stop the world. So I say, you know, how do you turn out the television? Well, you don't go to the control and hit the off button because there's still power going to the TV. You reach you reach behind and pull the cord. Nothing flows. So people think they're always unplugging their appliances if they turn them off. But if you're plugged in, you're plugged in. What I'm saying is completely unplug.
Wow. The book is Time Shifts, Experiences of Slippage into the Past and Present. My guest today has been Von Breschler. What would you like to leave the listener with in terms of the benefits of doing this? And I think the more important question is, as we begin to embrace more of these Eastern philosophies, where does this fit in?
It's important to awaken the spirit within you. It's important to awaken to the journey that you're here to experience. And the journey is not just getting up, making coffee and going to work, going to bed and doing the same thing the next day. There's more to life than this. So this is a journey. I'm talking about awakening to a greater journey of self-discovery.
Excellent. Vaughn, it's been a pleasure. We're going to have you on again. And I really, really enjoyed this. You're one of these wisdom teachers that we need to hear more from because, you know, it's so easy just to turn the TV on and blank out.
It is.
And I think a lot of us do that, including me included.
Yeah. Yep. Guilty as charged.
Right. All right.
Thanks, Cliff.
Real pleasure. Thanks, Vaughn. In all the years I've done programming for conferences, I don't think I've had anyone speak on shifting time. So I don't know if it's obviously it's not a new phenomenon, but it's not one that I have heard about. So I hope you enjoyed that. His book just came out. It came out at the beginning of this month. So you can see it and get it on Amazon or your favorite local bookstore. It's published by Barron Company and distributed by St. Martin's Press and Simon & Schuster. But it's on Amazon. I know a lot of people don't like Amazon, but it's where I get my books because it just comes so fast. And if you're a Prime member, Prime, P-R-I-M-E, they'll speed it to you. I get stuff within 24 hours, sometimes pretty quick. So anyhow, time shift, kind of cool. I want to remind you, I'm doing a tour of Mexico, the central Mexico area, October 7th through the 17th of this year. We're coming out of the pandemic, and it's time to get out and enjoy a vacation or a getaway. And Mexico is a great place to not only vacation, but to see some of these amazing pyramidal communities, these huge man-made pyramids, and also get a sense of the levels of consciousness these people practice in their sacred dwellings. There's a lot of temples that are placed on top of telluric fields, and we're going to be working with tapping in or plugging in to these sacred sites with techniques that I will be presenting you. I created a document that you can keep, and we'll practice it a few times about intentionally tapping in and asking for more information, more guidance, or for healing, for wisdom, or whatever you want to do when you're in these sacred places. This is something that you will be able to take with you and keep for the rest of your life. I was going to introduce it to the tour group in Egypt. Didn't work out, but those of you who join me in Mexico October 7th of this year, you will have a one-hour training with me, and you will tap into these sacred places. So many of these ancient temples, these pyramidal structures, actual pyramids, sit on top of ley lines and telluric fields. If you bring a compass, and this is what I do occasionally, and you walk up to these pyramids and the compass starts going around and there's a magnetic field, that's the indication that you're sitting on a potential telluric field. So come out October 7th to the 17th and join me. For more information, go to earthancients.com/tours and you'll see the entire itinerary. Hey, now one of the things we're doing is we are providing Earth Ancients listeners with a significant reduction in price until the end of August. And you'll be surprised. Most of the time, this is very expensive when you have an all-inclusive tour, especially 10 days. We got it covered. All you got to do is get yourself to Mexico City. Everything else is taken care of. And we even have some extra surprises that we're going to include in this tour. So check it out. More information, earthancients.com/tours. All right, that's it for this program. I want to thank Vaughn Bressler for his insight on time shifts. As always, Ruth Thomas for her work and our editing team putting it all together. Next week, we're talking about lucid dreaming. This is something that's been practiced for hundreds, if not thousands of years by indigenous cultures. This is when you identify your dream and you begin working with spirit helpers and guides and friends and family who show up in your dreams and how to benefit from it. So lucid dreaming is the program with an actual expert. So who actually provides techniques. Remember, Destiny is all about tools for transformation. All right, be well, take care, and we'll talk to you soon.